Oil prices take a ride.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. It's been a wild day for the price of oil. There was actually a special trading session yesterday because of Hurricane Gustav. Oil shot up to $118 a barrel. But since then, things have calmed down. Oil has dropped $5 this morning to $113. Gustav has weakened a bit, but it's certainly still a threat to the Gulf Coast oil complex. Let's bring in Jorge Piñon. He used to work in the oil industry and is now at the University of Miami. Jorge, what's the biggest concern?
The Achilles heel of the system is the refining system.
Mm-hmm.
Crude oil production can come back on stream. Pipeline systems can come back on stream. But if somehow we lose refinery capacity, we don't have the capacity then to turn crude oil into refined products that both you and I need, whether it's gasoline, diesel, or jet fuel. Right now, all that we have lost is production. This is nothing major since most refineries already have inventories. And remember that we do have the strategic petroleum reserves, so that will give us at least a few days of crude oil supply if we need it.
So, Jorge, if there is significant damage to refining capacity, what kind of scenario could we see with oil prices?
I would not be surprised if you see crude oil prices move anywhere in between the $1 to $2 range. Once damage assessment have been made to the system, then you see a true reaction in the marketplace. But the industry is certainly prepared, so I think damage could very well be minimal to the system.
Well, on that point, oil companies say that they're much more storm resistant with their platforms than they were 3 years ago with Katrina. You buying that?
Yes, I'm buying that because we are better prepared because we already have the experience of a major catastrophic event in our industry that we never had before. It is not necessary that our technology is better, it's that our know-how is better. So I know for a fact that the industry is much better prepared to manage this kind of risk.
Jorge Piñon, an energy fellow with the University of Miami, thanks for joining us.
A pleasure. Thank you.
These are trying times for the global economy. Wall Street has the day off, but the overseas markets are struggling this morning. The head of Britain's Treasury said his country faces the worst economic crisis in 60 years. That sent the British pound to an all-time low against the euro. In Asia, the markets finished almost 2% lower. Brett Neely has more from Europe.
For the most part, trading was calm across Europe this morning. But the worst-case scenario, a Katrina-style storm, is on the minds of some traders, says fund manager Justin Urquhart-Stewart.
Really, the key issue isn't so much the amount of oil, it's any damage to infrastructure. Remember, of course, we have no shortage of oil. What we do have, of course, is a shortage of refining capacity.
ExxonMobil, Royal Dutch Shell, and Valero are among the companies that shuttered refineries along the Gulf Coast on Sunday. About 15% of U.S. refining capacity has been shut down by Gustav. Oil trader Rob Laughlin says the industry's emergency plans are far better now than 3 years ago.
But from the oil side of things, we would expect certainly there's a high likelihood that there'll be normal resumption within days.
In Berlin, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, September 1st on Marketplace.org. This being Labor Day, we decided to take a look at the state of the American worker. What's happening with wages, insurance, buying power? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
Workers' wages are a mixed bag. Cornell Labor Relations Professor Harry Katz says skilled workers are making good money.
Workers who know how to make use of computers or help build those Boeing planes that are selling so well.
But low-skilled workers are finding their hours cut. Rising gas and food prices further erode their salaries. Economist Heidi Shierholz at the Economic Policy Institute says these workers are spending less. Retailers then have to tighten their belts.
They'll hire fewer workers who will then become people who are spending a lot less, and you start to see this downward spiral.
As for insurance, the Census Bureau is reporting that the number of uninsured Americans actually fell last year, although that was only because more were insured through government programs. The Economic Policy Institute says the share of Americans with insurance coverage through an employer fell in 2007 for the seventh straight year. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The airline industry usually hates to see Labor Day arrive. Travel really drops off from the summer volume. This year, the fall looks especially frustrating for the airlines, their employees, passengers. John Dimsdale has more.
Continental is about to drop service to 15 cities. Southwest will trim 200 daily flights. And by the end of the year, there will be 36,000 fewer airline jobs.
It's the incredible shrinking airline industry.
Forrester research analyst Henry Hartefelt says 9 airlines closed up shop this year, including Zoom Airlines, just last week. Fuel costs have jumped 50% over the past year, while ticket prices are up only 6 to 8%, thanks to fierce competition. That's left airlines scrambling to charge for all the extras, like luggage, pillows, even snacks. Julius Maldutis with Aviation Dynamics expects the smaller industry to have fewer members as well.
The Delta-Northwest merger is, simply put, a done deal. We will see what happens in Continental Airlines' relationship with United Airlines next year.
Maldutis expects this turbulence to last another 12 to 18 months. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Harvard University plans to give away 200 tons of used furniture and office equipment this year. That's a lot of desks and cabinets. They give this stuff away every week for free. But these days, if you want the items whole, you better get there early. Hamad Ahmed explains.
I'm here in a parking lot behind Harvard University Recycling Center. It's Thursday morning, time for the weekly furniture giveaway, and the atmosphere is frenzied.
A couch! Oh my God!
There's a guy in overalls pulling PVC pipes out of a giant bin. A grandmotherly woman is hefting a laser printer into an office chair, and then she's pushing it along like it's a shopping cart. And all around me, there are men with hand trucks hauling away filing cabinet after filing cabinet. Off to one side, 8-year-old Gemma and her mother are holding hands as they look on. It's their first time here.
We just had heard about, you know, the free stuff, so we thought we would check it out, and it looks kind of like a zoo.
This is going crazy.
It is going crazy. Let's watch out so that we don't get run over.
I lose them in the crowd, but soon I'm talking to Sergio Lopez. He's one of the hand truck guys, and I ask him what he could possibly do with so many filing cabinets.
I come to pick up the metal. I go get a little money, you know, for the metal.
We've seen an unprecedented level of people coming for the metal, just the metal value.
That's Rob Gogan. He's associate manager for recycling and waste at Harvard University, and he's been overseeing this event for years.
They pull out file cabinets, pipes and pumps, springs and sprockets, and even nails and screws.
Since January, the price of U.S. scrap steel has doubled, from $350 per ton to $700. That's because in China, Russia, and Brazil, booming construction is fueling the demand for scrap steel, at the same time as the U.S. dollar is depreciating. So now recyclers can make more money than ever selling scrap, which not everyone is happy about. Danny is a tinkerer and a craftsman who's looking through a bin of computer parts.
My real pet peeve is you'll see a nice piece of equipment, and you go to pick it up and you find out that one of the scrap metalers has come by with a pair of pliers and just snipped the power cord off. So it's now useless. It's now a piece of junk because they wanted the 5 cents worth of copper that was in the power cord.
Our intention and our hope is that our furniture will be recovered for maximum utility, for reuse.
Again, Rob Gogan.
Sometimes people say, well, you should give first preference to people who are going to reuse the furniture. And I would like to, but I don't have the staff to monitor and police who gets what.
The way Rob Gogan sees it, the furniture and office equipment may not always be reused the most efficiently, but at least it's not ending up in a landfill. Back at the parking lot, Gemma and her mother are walking by this dumpster that's overflowing with metal rods and rusty poles. I ask Gemma what she sees there.
A whole bunch of junk.
Yeah, so you think they might recycle it?
I think they might.
They'll make something out of it.
Like air conditioners or computers?
Like air conditioners, computers, or shiny new office buildings in Shanghai. In Boston, I'm Hamad Ahmed for Marketplace.
Kids all over the East Coast know this sound by heart. It's the Mr. Softy ice cream jingle. The problem for Mr. Softy is that other companies have started playing its song. So now Mr. Softy is getting angry. Joel Rose has our story.
It's a muggy afternoon in Brooklyn, and I'm driving around with Hillary Doc Guichard, who runs a Mr. Softy distributorship a few miles from here. It only takes us 20 minutes to find an ice cream truck that's not one of his.
So here's one right here. You see the blue at the bottom and the white at the top? This is a typical example of somebody trying to be a fake Mr. Softy.
This truck is only imitating the official Mr. Softy colors, but some of the alleged copycats are a lot bolder. They use the music, the name, even the trademarked graphics on the side of the truck.
This mark right here is what we call the Conehead mark. It's a cone with the ice cream, vanilla ice cream on top, and a smiley face and a bow tie. That picture is a registered trademark owned by Mr. Softy.
Jeffrey Zucker is the lawyer for Mr. Softy, Inc. He's filed trademark infringement suits against hundreds of ice cream truck owners. He has yet to lose a case.
Competition is fine, but unfair competition when someone uses our trademarks and operates trucks right in the same areas as our paying franchisees is not fun.
Those franchisees pay thousands of dollars a year in royalties just to use Mr. Softy's trademarks. That's on top of the $100,000 it takes to buy a real Mr. Softy truck.
All right, three vanilla sprinkles.
No, this one!
Oh, forget it. Two sprinkles, yeah. And
back in Brooklyn, Doc Guichard's customers have more pressing things to worry about. Guichard, who moved to the U.S. from the tiny Caribbean nation of Nevis, says the big losers in all this are the little guys, the franchisees who scrimp and save to start their own business.
I'm not able to maximize my potential as a Mr. Softy when there are copycats around who don't have the overhead that I have, but are still fooling the kids that they are Mr. Softy.
You don't think the kids distinguish?
They don't, because, you know, kids are impulsive buyers. All they see is a blue and white truck, and they start running, "Mommy, I want an ice cream."
Mr. Softy has been around since 1956. The New Jersey-based company today has more than 300 franchise operators in 16 states. But it's only in the last few years that Mr. Softy has gotten serious about protecting its trademarks. That's when the company hired a private investigator named Darren Giglio to get pictures of the phonies.
There's been situations where there are some drivers that get irate and they'll jump out of the car and they'll confront us. There was a driver that once pulled out a pipe and he was waving it around.
Right now, Mr. Softy has a lawsuit pending against 10 defendants in Brooklyn and Queens. Only one of them has a listed phone number, and he didn't return my calls. Mr. Softy Vice President Jim Conway says a lot of the people the company is suing are second- and third-time offenders who register their trucks under fake names each time.
As we gain the cooperation of the court and the damages become more punitive, people will have second thoughts about this because they know that we're going to pursue them aggressively.
But even Mr. Softy's private eye, Darren Giglio, isn't so sure.
It's been 6 years. We'll probably keep doing it, but some people just never learn.
Until they do, Mr. Softy will just have to keep playing hardball. In Philadelphia, I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.